Welcome to Coaching versus Therapy. I'm David Steele. I am founder of Relationship Coaching Institute, and with me today is Lynn Marshall, our Director of Couples Trainings, and Lynn Michelson, our Director of Singles Trainings. And what we all have in common is that we are therapists who discovered coaching. And today's program is Therapy versus Coaching. We would like to cover similarities and differences between coaching and therapy, how to determine if a client is a candidate for coaching or really needs therapy, is it possible to combine coaching and therapy with a client, how therapists can do both therapy and coaching in their practice or should, and can coaches use therapeutic techniques with their clients. And of course, this is all shades of gray, and we also want to know what your questions and concerns are. So my plan is that we presenters just sort of cover the bullet points here and then open it up to find out what your questions are. These bullet points are questions that we've been getting for a long time, so I've been looking forward to this program for a long time. So we will definitively cover the subject of coaching versus therapy, especially as it applies to relationship coaching. So as far as what qualifies us to talk like this, besides being the founder of Relationship Coaching Institute, I'm a therapist. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist in California. I got my start in the field in 1978. I was licensed in 1985. If you want to look me up, my license number is 21897. I'm still licensed in the state of California, even though I don't do therapy anymore and haven't done it for quite a while. But I still believe in therapy. I have what I think is a pretty clear idea of the distinction between coaching and therapy, and so we'll be talking more about that today. So, Lynn, I'd like you to speak to your clinical background. What kind of therapist are you, and how you discovered coaching that qualifies you to be speaking to us today?
Yeah, I went into psychotherapy back in the early 90s, got my master's in social work, and then became licensed as a licensed clinical social worker, and worked in hospital settings, and then I worked in counseling settings. And so I had about 12 years of work with all kinds of presenting problems. And then I guess it was about 99 or so, somewhere around there, I think I heard my first life coach, and her name was Cheryl Richardson, and it was just, she was had this little bitty group in this huge, I don't know, 1,000-person conference, and I just went, whoa, this is direct and practical and hits the mark. And I began getting some coaching from her coach. Do you know Shirley Anderson? One of the master coaches at Coach U, and then began my training. And it really answered a question I had had in my mind for a number of years, which was, before I even knew about coaching, which is I had a real urge to work with the whole person. Things like money, things like spirituality maybe, things like why people weren't making movement in various areas of their life, relationships. And coaching just provided a perspective and tools. So I went ahead and I did some initial training with the Institute of Life Coach Training. I did their intro program. And then I did the bulk of my training with Coach Training Institute, went through their entire program, got certified. I'm a certified coactive coach, did their program. And then I've completed their pretty extensive relationship coaching training as well, relationship and organization training programs last year. And I continue to get lots of training and coaching.
Linda, why don't you introduce what kind of therapist you are and how you came to coaching?
Okay, well, I started out in the field of chemical dependency as a family therapist and discovered Imago relationship therapy in the 1990s and trained in that. And I discovered coaching through a private practice sanity workshop where Pat Williams was named as a place where therapists could get training in coaching. And so I went through that program, and that's where I met David and joined the Relationship Coaching Institute because my focus has always been on relationships, and the rest is history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got my initial coaching training at Coaches Training Institute, and then I trained with Pat Williams at Therapist University, now Institute for Life Coach Training, and I helped him develop the program, actually. We were kind of developing our programs at the same time, and I taught on his faculty for a while. So I feel like I have a pretty good grounding in what coaching is and what therapy is. And at this point, let's open up the line. Okay, Linda, it's just you and me for a while. So let's talk about the similarities and differences between coaching and therapy. Linda, you talk about this during our Introduction to Relationship Coaching training quite a bit. And on the RelationshipCoachingInstitute.com website, if you click on the link, the navigation link on the left menu, about relationship coaching, you will see an item, What is Relationship Coaching? And there's a table there that I constructed a long time ago on general differences between coaching and therapy. So, Linda, would you like to speak to that a bit, how coaching and therapy are different?
Okay, well, the thing that I think is significant is that the marriage, I'm talking about relationship coaching now, that the marriage and family therapy movement has its roots in personal growth and eventually became aligned with the medical model, where they began to diagnose problems and treat dysfunction and collect third-party payments. But the roots are not there in the medical model, and I just think that's important for people to know. And really, the difference is there's a lot of gray area, but the difference, a lot of it is in the perception or mindset of the professional, and some of it is perception and mindset of the public. So for the professional, the focus is more on the unconscious and getting at the root of the problem, and deals a lot with feelings and emotional healing. And in order to do that, they rehash the past a lot, resolve pain from the past, and the focus is on self-understanding. For the coaching professional, though, their focus is on the conscious and making effective conscious choices, and rather than getting at the root of the problem, on actions to implement the choices that people are making. And maybe they have to overcome some barriers, we usually call them gremlins in coaching, to meeting those goals that they have, but it's much more future-oriented. It can recognize and embrace the past, but the focus is to move on to the future, build skills, gain knowledge in order to implement the actions and meet the goals that you want for your life. So a little bit different mindset there. Also, the therapist, if they're working from the medical model, tends to see the client as dysfunctional and reactive and in need of healing and fixing. Whereas as coaches, we see our clients as functional. They're able to contain their reactivity. They're whole and complete as they are. They're the experts on their own life and vision, and we work at drawing out their inner wisdom so that they can find their own voice and be empowered. And they have the ability to be proactive towards their goals and take responsibility. Another difference is that therapists usually hang out shingles and get referrals and wait for clients to come to them. But as coaches, we can do presentations, complimentary sessions, and we can actually seek our clients out. So those are some of the differences that I see in the mindset of the professional. From the public's point of view, they tend to see a therapist as a last resort to save their marriage. Now, I'm talking about relationship coaching and therapy here. And they tend to see the therapist then as an expert who heals them because there's something wrong, either with themselves, usually with their partner, or maybe with their relationship, the two of them. And they see themselves as a failure. Usually they come in wanting their partner to change, and they're in some kind of crisis, and there's a lot of anger. If the public is aware of coaching, and we still have a lot to do to educate the public about relationship coaching in particular, but if they know anything about coaching, what coaches do is help people get the life that they want. I like to call it to get a wow of a life, and that the coach is more of a partner with them to achieve that and a cheerleader cheering them on. They don't see anything wrong with them, or with their relationship. They just recognize that they have some barriers and challenges to overcome, and they see themselves needing to be accountable to someone in order to meet their goals, just like a person who is trying to build a business, like many of us are in the process of doing, or achieve some other kind of tangible goal in their life. So they want somebody to hold them accountable to the steps that they need to take to get there. But they're able to take responsibility for themselves. They just want the coach to assist them so that they can get to where they want to be. And frankly, for me, those kind of people and couples are a whole lot more fun to work with than the people that I work with in a therapy setting. So those are the major differences that I see.
At this point, Linda, you did a great job of talking about the differences between coaching and therapy and relationship coaching and couples therapy. I'd like to mention just a few similarities, because they are similar. I mean, if you look through a video camera and you see a coach working with a client and a therapist working with a client, it might look very similar.
Mm-hmm.
And some similarities include that, you know, it's both fee for service. We are paid for our services, and the change and progress is assumed to occur over time. So it's an ongoing service, face to face, personal, intimate service with a client or a couple. And it's not a consultation necessarily. You're not paid to fix everything in one session. It's assumed that change and progress in a relationship or relationship goal would occur over time. When it comes to private pay, though, most coaches charge by the month and most therapists charge by the session. And as a therapist, I started a long time ago, before I even knew about coaching, charging for four sessions at a time, because I was getting a lot of one-session wonders, people that would come for an initial session. It would be wonderful and great. They would be very happy, and they would assume they got all they needed. Thank you very much. So I got smart, and I declined to take on any clients that would not commit to at least four sessions and pay for that in advance. And, you know, a good client knows that progress occurs over time. And real change requires time to happen. It just doesn't happen in one session. And it's the verbal delivery. You know, we're talking with our clients and we're listening with our clients. That's a similarity. It requires training to do it well. That's a similarity. It really can be a can of worms, because there's a lot of overlap and there's gray, and we are just communicating the differences and similarities from our perspective. And there's going to be a lot of different opinions out there. But I would like to open the line and find out at this point if you have any questions or comments or any differences or similarities that you have in mind that's a little bit different or that we missed. Next up is how to determine if a client is a candidate for coaching or really needs therapy. And we have a web page for you to visit at relationshipcoachinginstitute.com/coachability.htm. relationshipcoachinginstitute.com/coachability.htm. This is an article that I wrote called Screening for Coachability. And it starts with the very first sentence: a common question of our coaches is, how do you know when an individual or couple needs therapy instead of coaching? And I don't want to go into all the information in the article. You can read the article for yourself. There's a lot of good stuff here for you if you're ever wondering about that. But some of the suggestions as far as screening for coachability, or how to tell the difference if somebody really needs therapy or needs coaching, one of the things that is very important is that we do enough information collecting to know if they are under a doctor's care, if they require psychiatric care. And if you're a therapist, you're going to do an intake and you're going to ask about functioning. And as a coach, we pretty much need to do that as well. So with coaching, a lot of your clients come to you and they look quite functional. Does not look like there's any, you know, issues, serious issues in their life. And you might take that for face value, but chances are it's a good idea to ask them, are they under a doctor's care? Have they ever had a psychiatric diagnosis? How is their sleeping? How is their eating? How is it going at work? You know, all those basic kinds of functioning questions. And the issue really comes up, is this client more appropriate for therapy or are they a coaching client? It really comes up if there's a question that comes up for you. So there's a red flag. And so what do you do with that red flag? Well, you explore it, that's for sure. You ask more questions about it. You might ask for a release to talk with their doctor or a psychiatrist, whoever's care they're under. If they are not under anybody's care and the concern that is coming up for you, the red flag, it's being untreated and unaddressed, then what I've done in the past is to create a contract with the client. Well, I'll take you on and we can work together in coaching, but I need you to, you know, work with this kind of professional, let's say as a psychiatrist. So I can give you several referrals, and will you commit to making an appointment with one of them by this time next week? And so that becomes diagnostic if the client actually does it or not. And then when they do and they're under the psychiatrist's care, then I can monitor that and I can stay in conversation about them. So coaching can be very, very useful in supporting the treatment of, you know, other health and mental health disciplines. You know, like if somebody is non-compliant or has trouble being compliant with their physical therapist recommendations, that's an issue that you can address in coaching. So coaching can work very well together with, you know, other professions. And one of my favorite techniques of screening for coachability, deciding if a client is more appropriate for therapy or coaching, I call reverse diagnosis. And I learned about reverse diagnosis when I was working with kids, and I discovered, in fact, the psychiatrist flat out told me that the way they diagnose ADHD in kids is to give them Ritalin, and if the kid responds to Ritalin, it means he's ADHD. And they called it reverse diagnosis. It's you allow the results to prove the diagnosis rather than, you know, checking off a list or using your subjective judgment. You know, you try something. So here, if you try coaching and it works, then they must be coachable. If you try coaching and it doesn't work, then they must not be a candidate for coaching. So that's reverse diagnosis. Now, there are times where... it's not a good idea to do that. And coaching by itself is harmless. Doing good coaching, helping a client identify a goal, helping them close the gap between where they are and where they want to be, that in itself is harmless. How's it going to hurt somebody? However, there are three ways that coaching can be harmful to a client. One is if it's unskilled coaching, meaning it's more like consulting, you're giving advice, you're imposing your own judgments, you're prescribing interventions, telling them what to do. You know, you're doing therapy and calling it coaching, you know, things like that, that are not coaching. The second way that a coach can harm a client is by continuing ineffective coaching. If something's not working and you're continuing to work with a client and collect, you know, money from them, that's ineffective coaching, that's doing harm to the client. They are suffering at your hands because they could and should be doing something more effective than working with you ineffectively. So an ethical coach would always keep tabs on that and make referrals and address progress or lack of progress if that's what's going on. And the third way that a coach can harm a client is by providing coaching instead of what's really needed. Now, if what they really need is therapy or some psychiatric intervention, like they are depressed and have suicidal ideation, and they really need a therapist, they really need some psychiatric intervention or assessment, and you do coaching instead, you are doing harm. So on the one hand, coaching by itself is harmless. On the other hand, if you're doing coaching instead of what's really needed, that is harmful. So reverse diagnosis, you know, use it carefully, use your judgment. Is there a need here that really requires a referral, needs some intervention or assessment from a professional other than you? And if so, it can be your first agenda of coaching to require and contract with them to get that intervention and support and assessment. And let's see, going through the article here on screening for coachability, in terms of doing this with couples, there are some things that we would suggest that you screen out immediately. So if a couple comes to you, now realize that most couples will seek help because they're experiencing conflict. They're not getting along. Their relationship sucks. And conflict by itself does not necessarily mean the couple needs therapy. I mean, if we can teach them the communication map and they run with it and they end up, you know, resolving their conflicts and having better communication, you know, that's great. That means they had a skills deficit. Remember the coaching triad of attitude, skills, and choices. That as coaches, we address our clients' interfering attitudes. We help them acquire the skills they need to be successful and address skills deficits. And we help them make the choices that are effective for them and implement those choices. So conflict by itself just might be, you know, the skills deficit. It doesn't necessarily mean in itself that they need therapy. However, here are some items that might mean that they need therapy and they're probably not a good candidate for coaching. One is spousal abuse, you know, verbal, physical, emotional abuse. And any relationship that involves abuse involves one or two volatile, impulsive, you know, controlling people that are probably not candidates for coaching. Another is chemical dependency. If you get an indication that there's some chemical dependency involved, alcoholism, you know, drug use, you know, something like that, it's not a good idea to coach them unless they are in active recovery and they've been, you know, clean and sober for a while. And thirdly, we suggest screening out if there is an uncooperative partner. Coaching requires two people that are willing to take responsibility for their life, and if somebody's being dragged and they're uncooperative, then the couple is probably not a candidate for coaching. Fourthly, if there is an intractable anger present in this relationship, there's just resentment and there's somebody just stuck in this anger and resentment. You know, they're in blaming mode, they're externalizing, they're being the victim. You know, they are not good candidates for coaching. If this has been a long-standing problem and severe, not a good prognosis for coaching. The anger and resentment is individual. That needs to be, you know, addressed. It's not really a relationship issue. It's about, you know, this person not owning what's going on for them and using anger as a defense. And lastly, we suggest screening out impulse control problems. This involves people that have multiple affairs, they have financial problems, they're in trouble with the law. Generally, these are indicators of low levels of functioning and or character disorders. They're not really candidates for coaching if they lack impulse control. Coaching requires people that want to be accountable, that will be accountable, that will, you know, act in their best interest. And there are plenty of people in the world that truly do lack impulse control, just like there's plenty of people in the world that are chemically dependent, and they're not candidates for coaching. So keep an eye out for those. So what we've covered so far is what qualifies us to be talking about the difference between coaching and therapy. We covered the similarities and differences between coaching and therapy, and how to determine if a client is a candidate for coaching or really needs therapy. So Lynn, I'd like you to speak to, is it possible to combine coaching and therapy with a client? You're a therapist, you want to coach them, they want coaching, you see that they need therapy, they might even say they want therapy as well as coaching. Can you do both at the same time with the same client?
Probably not. My way of doing it is I, just like you've been talking about, I assess a person for their coachability, and it becomes pretty obvious within the first couple of sessions, I think, if it, you know, has been a question. And often I have to then refer them out. Now, there are some clients that I have seen for coaching, and they might need therapy as well, but they've done some amazing progress as a coached person, even in a few sessions, because of the kinds of interventions and the kinds of questions and directions. So, and I'm a person, too, who my coaching does involve, you know, people really touching into what's in their way. So some therapists would call that therapy. But I call that finding the like you called them, the deficits earlier. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, my perspective on it is, no, absolutely not. I could not combine coaching and therapy because who I am as a therapist is very different from who I am as a coach. And who I am as a therapist is very soft and listening and supportive and tapping into the emotional vulnerability. And who I am as a coach is, you know, coaches need to have an edge. They need to hold their clients accountable. You know, we need to be able to tell the truth as we see it. And in therapy, there is a transference-countertransference phenomenon that we are trained to recognize and deal with. And I think it has to do with the emotional vulnerabilities that we're dealing with, that the transference and countertransference comes up. So, you know, transference is where the, you know, check me out if I'm wrong here, transference is where the client transfers, you know, feelings and associations of, you know, their parents or authority figures on us. And countertransference is where we transfer associations that we have with, you know, parents or authority figures, or maybe we, you know, transfer some feelings of you know, like our children or something like that. So we were transferring these, you know, feelings and associations on each other in a therapy relationship. And this issue tends to not come up in a coaching relationship because we're not dealing with the emotional vulnerabilities. So does that make sense about transference and countertransference? Linda, do you have any input about that?
It does, and, you know, in my experience, most of the kind of even therapy work that I've done has been a coaching model. Like with chemically dependent people, you have to be very direct and confrontive.
Mm-hmm.
And with in Imago, which I trained in, it's much more of a coaching model because the transference, countertransference is prevented because you're facilitating the relationship, not the two people. The two people are talking to each other, and you are just facilitating their dialogue with each other.
Right.
And so it's much more of a coaching relationship. And that transference, they don't even get to interact with you much. So that prevents that from happening.
Yeah. So, Lynn, any comments about transference, countertransference, and
I would totally agree with that. In the coaching model, it just doesn't come up,
right?
Because there's such a directness. In the very first session, I do an assessment that includes what we call creating the relationship, creating the alliance, and we talk real directly about, you know, here's what's going to happen in the session, and if something comes up for you, you know, let's talk about it directly. We sort of handle everything up front. And so there really isn't any room for that.
Yeah, and like I said earlier, who I am as a therapist is very different from who I am as a coach. How about you, Lynn?
Well, you know, I don't do a whole lot of therapy anymore. So I do mostly entirely coaching if someone calls me. And so I'm the same pretty much with all my clients. It's just like you said, I'm direct. I have the edge. I, you know, take people places. I work with them on making sure they're in action. With therapy clients, you know, it's been a while. I think I don't know that I was so much soft as much as letting it more come from them, you know, letting it arise however it wanted to go and however long it took. And
right, being more than mirror.
Quite a long time. Yeah, and I do have some therapy clients still that I've been seeing for some time. So, yeah, I actually did try coaching one woman, I remember, and I kept asking her to do a prep sheet and things like that, and it really didn't work, and it was very clear she needed therapy. And so, you know, it was sort of like you said, the reverse diagnosis worked there as well, because it just didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
As you know, she just didn't work trying that approach.
Yeah.
And I've had couples like that as well, where I give them assignments to do between sessions and things, and they don't do them. They're not capable of coaching, and they don't take the kind of feedback that I do give them. They're not coachable in terms of the way I'm trying to facilitate their relationship, so I refer them to a therapist.
Right, and, you know, as a coach, we need to really be able to tell our truth and hold our clients accountable and have a little edge and challenge them a bit. And, you know, as a therapist, you got to be really careful about doing that. And
there's so much more sensitivity.
Yeah. So it seems like the consensus, ladies and gentlemen, is that it's not a good idea and it's not really possible to combine coaching and therapy in the same client. And realize this is our opinion, these are our experiences, these are our interpretations of coaching and therapy. You might think differently, and that's just okay, but you're getting our version. So let's talk about the next one. We get this a lot. Can therapists do both therapy and coaching in their practice? And anybody want to take this on?
I think that, this is Lynn, I think there's no reason why you can't, as long as you make it clear. I don't know if people do that, but I don't see why you cannot.
Yeah,
I know some therapists who are doing that. My question is, who wants to?
You know, when I first discovered coaching and I got really, really excited about it and started getting training and started developing what relationship coaching is, I swore to myself I would never stop being a therapist, that I would do both in my practice from here on out. And it wasn't too long after that that I decided this coaching thing is way too much fun. I don't want to do therapy anymore. I can make the bigger difference in the world as a coach, and I really got it that people come to therapy when it's almost too late, and it's more of a fixing the problem and the damage kind of approach by then, even though we as therapists don't like that particular part of it. We'd rather have couples come to us, you know, much earlier in the game. You know, they don't. So as a coach, you know, I strongly believe that I can make a much better difference in the world by preventing divorce rather than trying to, you know, save marriages on the brink of divorce.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that statement, you know. Well, would you want to? There is a comment I'd like to share about that, which is, if you are licensed, your licensing body does not care what you call what you do. You can call it EMDR, you can call it XYZ, you can call it, you know, EFT, you can call it coaching, you can call it cognitive behavioral therapy. They don't care what you call it. In their eyes, everything you do falls under your license. So if you want to be a licensed therapist and do coaching, just realize that in the eyes of the state and your licensing board, you are a therapist, whether you're doing coaching or not. Everything you do falls under their regulations, so you need to follow all their regulations. So it's a bit more restrictive than if you were to let go of your license. And, you know, I still have my
license. David, have you let go of yours?
No, I still have my license. And
I still have mine, too, and I keep it up.
And, you know, I found I was able to do coaching and not violate my license at all. And so I think it's quite possible to be a therapist and have a therapy practice and do coaching and have a coaching practice. The most important parts of that are keeping them separate. Otherwise, it just gets very messy and confusing to the public. You know, if you put yourself out as a therapist and people call you and then you suggest doing coaching to them. So how do you solve that? In my mind, you might have two different business cards, two different business names, two different phone numbers, two different websites. I don't think it works well to, you know, have like, you know, David Steele, therapist and coach. And, you know, call me, I'll help you with your relationships. Well, you know, the people that come for therapy and that require diagnosis and treatment and insurance billing are a very different species from the people that, you know, want and come for coaching. So I think in our practice, we kind of have to keep them separate, have different channels coming into our practice, have it be separate enough that it's easily identified. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. I've kept my license, too.
So, yes, you can do both therapy and coaching. It's probably not a good idea to do it with the same client. You can do therapy in your practice and do coaching in your practice, but keeping them separate, you know, for example, in coaching, it's generally not a good idea to use labels and titles like Dr. Marshall or Dr. Michelson. Put a PhD after your name or even an LMFT after your name. because that is a title for your therapy practice. That's a clinical title. That's clinical background and training.
What about, you can use your certified coach title.
Yeah, certainly, but not as a therapist. You don't go, you know, David Steele, LMFT certified coach. If you're marketing your therapy practice, no, you don't do that. And the thing about doctor is that it is a medical model term. And so if you're a coach, you really wouldn't want to be associated with the medical model. You wouldn't want to be, you know, Dr. Lynn Michelson, you know, relationship coaching, in my opinion, by the way. Now, there might be some PhDs that are listening to this and they're bristling, but this is my strong opinion that the doctor label is associated with the medical model. Therapy, which technically does involve diagnosis, treatment, and qualifying for insurance billing, being licensed by the state and all that stuff, you know, does come under the medical model, and coaching does not come under the medical model. So that's just my opinion. Okay, so the last bullet point we have that we'd like to cover today is, can coaches use therapeutic techniques with their clients? And I think what I had in mind in talking about this is there are these therapeutic, I would call them therapeutic techniques, like EFT, that coaches embrace and use with clients, and it addresses emotions. And so what do you think about coaches doing that and as opposed to therapists doing that?
I think you're opening an interesting can of worms here, because I think that some of us coaches feel like dealing with emotions is an important part of even coaching people. And so I do feel it's important to be able to have people express and learn how to express their emotions and learn how to get clear out some that are in their way. Another coach might not. So that's my take on it.
So if you're a coach that likes to deal with emotions, how do you do that in a way that's not therapy?
Well, I think it's all, and I wouldn't speak at the beginning, but it's all in terms of what is the purpose of the work. And if the purpose of the work with a person is to move them along the path of fulfillment and move them toward their goals, you know, get them in touch with how they want to live so that they live a more satisfying life, sometimes things get in the way, which are emotions. So teaching them how to deal with those or be effectively a communicator, to me, feels like a skill. And it doesn't seem like therapy to me. Whereas therapy, the model has more to do with undoing and changing some of maybe, you know, a lot of early childhood issues. So I think it has much to do, if anything, with where you want the client to go, what you see as the outcome.
Right.
I agree with what Lynn is saying, and I see it as helping our clients develop emotional intelligence and be in emotional integrity, and those are skills.
Mm-hmm. And I have an idea for a guideline. So let me run this by you, see what you think. If you are teaching a skill to your clients, something that they can do on their own, it can be coaching. So therefore, something like EFT, you're teaching it to your clients so that they can do it on their own. That can be done under the umbrella of coaching. If it's something that you need to do to your client, it's not something that they can, it's not a skill that they can learn, it's not something they can go home and do. That's more like
EMDR.
Pardon me?
Like EMDR.
Yeah, like EMDR. That's a great example. Mm-hmm. So if you are using a therapeutic technique, you're waving your magic, you know, clinician therapeutic wand. It's something that they must come to you to do for treatment. You know, I can't see how that's coaching. I'm sorry. However, if you're teaching them a skill like EFT and its hybrids that they can then do on their own, then that might be okay under the coaching umbrella, as long as it's within the context of coaching. So what do you think of that guideline?
I would agree with that.
Yeah, I think that just happens to work. I mean, it's you brought it out as if it was, you know, you could, you know, think about it each time you use it, will that work? But that does tend to be true, that we want to teach our clients things that they can then do on their own. We absolutely want to do that. And so any technique that helps them do that, and they have to get practice. So, you know, they need to get practice with you. So that's the way it should unfold in coaching, I think.
Right.
It's an opportunity to practice something, to learn it, develop it, try it at home, come back, you know, see how it's going for them.
Right.
And I find when it's effective, when a particularly an emotional tool, like in the coaching school I went to, we did one of the ways that we work with clients was helping them access different perspectives on the same problem. So this morning, for instance, I had a client on the phone, and she was looking literally at talking to her boyfriend. So I had her access different perspectives she could look at with that same issue. And there were some emotions that came up as she did that. You know, there were some feelings. There were some things that came up. And so we looked at how that helps her communicate with her boyfriend or not. So you can't bypass it and say, no, we don't deal with emotions here. I mean, I think that would be very... a big disservice.
Right, but then emotions are not the focus of coaching. It's not, you know, the 100% of what you're doing with your client.
No.
And then there are shades of gray, but I do like the guideline that if you're doing something to your client that they can't do on their own, chances are it's therapy. So at this point, anything to add to the conversation about coaching versus therapy before we open it up?
I have one last thing to add, which is I think that both coaching and therapy are rich fields, and one thing I don't like is to make it like one is only one. There's a little bit of overlap, and I think in great therapy, people do make progress. So I don't want to demean it like it's, you know, there
right.
is.
Well, and therapists do coaching. You know,
exactly.
They do forms of coaching when they're doing therapy with their clients. And most therapists, you know, when they learn what coaching is and say, oh, yeah, I've been doing that for a long time. And there are forms of therapy that look very, very much like coaching. And, you know, my background is cognitive behavioral therapy, and so, you know, coaching is very familiar to me. So, and, of course, the coaching versus therapy question comes up typically just from therapists because they're trying to figure out, you know, where coaching starts and therapy ends and how they can incorporate it into their practice. So these questions and all this information is really directed at therapists. Coaches rarely, if ever, ask these kinds of questions or need this kind of information. So we hope this has been helpful.
David, can I just say something
yeah.
else? Because I do have coaches bring the question up sometimes in my training, because oftentimes what you are dealing with are the emotions between a couple,
mm-hmm.
and they get nervous about that. But we don't do any regressive work. That's how I talk about it.
Right.
There's no regressive work taking a person back to childhood traumas or anything like that in the coaching that we do. We may deal with the emotions that come up, but we're not regressing, doing regressive work. So
right.
that's a big difference.
Right. Yeah, it's a good comment. Thank you. Okay, so let's find out what's on your mind. Okay, so what comments, questions do you have about coaching versus therapy?
This is Barb. I'll go ahead.
Hi, Barb. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, I just had a lot of reactions to what you guys are saying, and I'm glad I came because I've been in these discussions before with folks, different therapists and coach discussions. So one of the things that I don't know if I want to add confusion to the issue, but the solution-focused method and cognitive behavioral therapy are not, you know, when we talk about therapies, and I think most of the time we're referring to these types of Freudian or when you spoke about the unconscious, that sort of thing, there's a wide range of therapies. So, there's even more gray around that because I was actually trained when I went through my master's program, managed care had come along. And that's why the cognitive behavioral and the short-term solution-focused stuff came along. And that's even... it's different from coaching, but it also has some overlap. So it's not just about going into the past, because solution-focused stuff does not either.
Right.
It really focuses on action. And that was one kind of thought I had. And I also agree, I'm in a position where I moved to a different state. So I'm still licensed in the other state, and I've kept that going, but I've never gotten licensed in the new state because I'm just enjoying the coaching stuff too much, and I don't really want to go back to that. I hope not to. So,
right.
The thing around keeping licenses, I was curious why you're keeping your license then if you're not doing it. And I know for me, there are some sort of like status kind of things in there. I'm trying to think of why do I really need to still go? I mean, I'm almost ready to send the application off. I've got a few little pieces to go to it, but I've been putting it off months. And I'm thinking, okay, well, there's part of me in my head that says, you know, it's that thing about the financial piece. Well, what if I, you know, something to fall back upon? Because you said, you know, your licensing body looks at you as practicing therapy and social work no matter what, and that always supersedes or whatever. So why not break free of that? And, you know, the whole thing, when I went to renew my license in the other state this past time, they wouldn't take any of my coaching stuff for continuing ed. So I had to go down two tracks. You know, I'm doing all this coaching stuff, but then I'm having to do all this other social work stuff. So it's, I'm just saying, I'm just putting it out there. I'm asking myself more than anything, but, you know, it's interesting to hear what people say about that.
Well, I would like to mention that a lot of therapists, when they discover coaching and they really enjoy doing coaching, they often come up with the idea of, oh, and we can bill insurance. And the clients want the insurance to pay rather than paying out of pocket. That's understandable. However, insurance pays for what is medically necessary. And insurance is not meant for coaching, and coaching doesn't qualify for any insurance plan except for things like EAP and, you know, things like that. So, the reason to keep your license, if you're going to do coaching and therapy, is so that you can bill insurance. However, I personally would never, ever, ever do coaching with a client and bill insurance, because then I would have to provide them a diagnosis. I would be signing my name saying that my work with them is medically necessary. Well, that's not what coaching does. You know, so as a therapist, I diagnose and treat.
Tonight.
As a coach, I help clients achieve their goals in life.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the financial reason, it's tempting to want to bill insurance for coaching, but please don't. That would be out of integrity.
It's kind of unethical, I would think. It's the only thing you could do would be an adjustment disorder, and even that's kind of
right.
Right. So.
And yeah, I do agree that there are, you know, therapeutic modalities that look a heck of a lot like coaching, but a lot of the perception of coaching has to do with where the client's coming from and how they view you. If they view you as the expert who's going to tell them what to do and knows more than them, that is more like a doctor-patient, you know, therapist-client relationship. If the client sees you as a partner, somebody that's going to support them to be successful in their goals, that is the perception of a coach-client relationship. So it can look the same. It can even have the same techniques, but the perception of the coach to the client and the perception of the client to the coach, you know, can sometimes be what makes a critical difference, especially working with couples. Because a couple that comes to a therapist, you know, they usually have the mindset of, there's something wrong with us. We got problems. We need help. And a couple going to a coach is typically, we want our relationship to be great. Let's do this about it. So mindset is everything.
Well, you know, that is interesting, too, because that was the other piece that I was going to talk about was, it's almost like this whole shift away from, I don't even know how to verbalize it, but I think that's what's happening out there in society where, you know, you wonder if therapy will survive eventually, because if, I mean, maybe there will always be a need, but I think if we get it switched around where people aren't feeling, you know, that, I don't even know how to say it, but people will be more functional, they'll come more functional, and it's a matter of language more than anything else.
Yeah.
I think people, because they think they're sick sometimes. I'm not saying all the time, but,
right,
you know, the whole languaging thing around all of this, what we go around believing about things. So.
Right. And if your medical insurance is paying for your coaching, your quote-unquote medical insurance, then, you know, it's not coaching. And in my experience, clients don't progress in coaching unless they're paying for it out of pocket. And even in therapy, it becomes a tough because, you know, clients need to be invested in order to get the benefit of the service. How invested are they if somebody else is paying for it?
Exactly.
So that's another point that I wanted to make, and I thank you for stimulating that, because now it's on the recording forevermore. And any other comments, questions about coaching versus therapy? This is great discussion. Thank you.
I wanted to make a comment, this is Linda, about something that Barb said.
Yeah.
About the solution-focused therapy. I really think it's a good sign that is moving, that particular school is moving back in the direction of the roots of marriage and family therapy and personal growth instead of in the medical model.
Yeah.
So I really don't think they should even call it therapy. I think they should call it coaching, because it's much more that.
I agree.
Well, this is Barb again. I think we have medicalized it more and more and more, just like the DSM used to have, 40 diagnoses. Now it has 10 times that.
Yeah.
So there's a pro and a con to that.
Okay, guys. Anybody else? Comments, questions about coaching versus therapy? Have we covered it all? Do you have something to add? Do you have a question that we haven't addressed? What's coming up for you?
I'm a psychologist in private practice and looking to make the transition. And I think the most realistic thing for me is to try to transition slowly, to make the transition from doing therapy as a psychologist into coaching. Do I need to go through coach training as a licensed psychologist to be ethical in terms of transitioning to coaching, or just screen each patient as they come in to see if they're coachable and make the determination that way?
Thanks for your question. Great question. There's really two sides of your question, and one is, what do you need to do to ethically put yourself out there as a coach and do coaching? And how about screening for coachability, making sure that your client is coachable? Well, on the latter question about screening for coachability, I gave a URL earlier in the call, relationshipcoachinginstitute.com/coachability.htm. That is an article that I put together on screening for coachability. It's pretty comprehensive. And so you can listen to this recording and refer to that article for any questions you might have about making sure your clients are coachable, screening for coachability, making sure that they don't really need therapy instead of coaching. So that addresses that part of it.
Okay.
As far as putting yourself out there as a coach, if you're a therapist, I strongly, strongly advise getting coaching training. That, yeah, you know, therapists do coach-like things, but until I got coaching training, I really didn't understand what coaching was. And I just strongly advise it, especially if you want to ethically call yourself a coach and, quote-unquote, market and sell coaching, you need to really understand what coaching is. You need to be trained as a coach, and not as a psychologist, by the way. When you take your coaching training, you need to unlearn a few things that you've learned about being a clinician.
Okay, burning question. As a psychologist, I am trained to think about liability, suicidality, people who, you know, might be homicidal or suicidal. I'm always looking behind me, covering my tracks, documenting to make sure that I'm taking care of that.
Yeah.
If I become a coach and I'm still a licensed psychologist in the state and I'm governed by the Licensing Board of Psychology, but I become a coach and I set up a coaching contract with people where I refer them out for psychotherapy, am I still liable if, God forbid, something occurs?
Absolutely, you're liable. Remember, coaching falls under your license. Your licensing board doesn't care what you call it. And so covering your bases by doing an intake, doing an assessment, assessing for functionality and, you know, all that stuff, all the training that you, as a psychologist, will come in handy for that so that you can cover your bases.
Thinking that my liability as a psychologist doing coaching is even higher because I'm a psychologist and I have that training, but I'm doing coaching and making it clear that I'm not doing mental health work,
mm-hmm.
Even so, if I take all the right steps, I wonder if there's some transition training I can get to understand how to handle that better so that I'm making it clear that I'm not treating those kinds of disorders anymore as a coach, given that I still am a licensed psychologist in the state.
The biggest insurance policy you have against malpractice
mm-hmm.
is by screening and selecting your coaching clients.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a good coaching client that you are truly helping as in coaching, they wouldn't dream of suing you for malpractice.
Right.
It only comes up with the ones that are on the borderline, that the ones that really need therapy, they got some problems. There's some red flags coming up.
Right.
And so if there's red flags coming up, then don't coach them.
Right. Okay. That makes sense.
Be a little too simple. But actually, I do believe it is that simple.
And I think those kinds of things get addressed in your coach training as well.
Okay. That might be the piece that I need to go through is the coach training.
Yeah, and
okay.
I do recommend Institute for Life Coach Training for therapists that want to enter coaching because it was designed for clinicians.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's Institute for Life Coach Training.
Right, and, you know,
okay.
Dr. Pat Williams, and I helped design the program. There might be a little redundancy, but it's designed so that, you know, all the things that you learn as a helping professional, you won't have to relearn. It gets really, you know, into what coaching is and how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, in my first coaching training at CTI, one of the first things they covered and first exercises was listening.
Right.
As a therapist, you know, oh, man, I have lots and lots of classes and training in listening. That's the first thing that we did in graduate school, so there was a lot of redundancy there for me. You know, there was other gold for me at CTI, but there was a lot of redundancy as well.
I think probably what pushes a lot of therapists into coaching is I'm ready to take a deep breath and get away from the serious pathology and just have a little more fun and deal with problems that are solvable, future-oriented, and I'm ready to step into that, and I'm very confused about... I don't take insurance, so most of my patients, I'm doing a lot of coaching anyway. They're pretty high functioning. I do a lot of parenting work, so I'm doing that kind of thing anyway, teaching behavior management skills to parents that they, after a couple of sessions, run with and do on their own. So I feel like I'm doing that kind of work a lot anyway because I have very high functioning patients who aren't that sick, and they're paying me out of pocket anyway. And so I'm just confused about how to change modalities, how to shift focus. But that helps. I think I just need the training.
Well, do you want to, your psychologist practice and do coaching, or do you want to just pretty much transition to doing coaching?
I don't know. I'm scared of losing the business.
Okay.
I think that's the biggest thing for me, is a lot of doctors. And.
Well, my advice would be to get coaching training,
mm-hmm.
start doing coaching, and you can decide later, because when I started, I swore I would always be a therapist. It had been my identity for so long, I couldn't ever imagine not being a therapist.
Exactly, exactly.
But, you know, a couple months later, I decided I didn't want to do therapy anymore, that I could make the much bigger difference as a coach, and I stopped doing therapy.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, you're welcome. And I thank you for joining us today. It's been a great program. And thanks for being a member of Relationship Coaching Institute.